If your business needs a new application, then developers will have to write code, a lot of code. If an application needs to be modernized, then you'll need time, resources, and caffeine. If that sounds daunting, then you need Watson X Code Assistant, AI designed to multiply developer productivity so you can generate code quickly. Let's create a more modern foundation for business with Watson X Code Assistant. Learn more at ibm.com/codeassistant. IBM, let's create.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Hi there, I'm Zach Braff.
And I'm Donald Faison.
We're real life best friends, but we met playing fake life best friends, Turk and JD, on the sitcom Scrubs.
20 years later, we've decided to rewatch the series one episode at a time and put our memories into a podcast you can listen to at home.
We're going
to
get all our special guest friends like Sarah Chalk, John C. McGinley, Neil Flynn, Judy Reyes.
Show creator Bill Lawrence, editors, writers, and even prop masters will tell us about what inspired the series and how we became a family.
You can listen to the podcast Fake Doctors, Real Friends with Zach and Donald on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
What's up, everybody? I am Ray Harkins, and you're listening to another episode of 100 Words or Less, the podcast, coming to you week after week with independent music discussion with people who are involved in a heavy way, whether they are contributing playing in a band, whether they're contributing behind the scenes. As long as they are involved in this awesome independent music community, that's who I'm bringing on. That's who I'm talking to. And this person embodies that for sure. His name is Finn McKenty. He's actually a repeat guest. If you wanted to dive all the way back, if I'm not mistaken, episode 6 of this show, which, you know, now we're closing in on 300. So that is a lot. And people that dive into the show and start to tell me that they've listened to, you know, 200 hours of this thing, I commend you. I am so happy that people are finding value out of the back catalog. And when I say back catalog, it makes it sound like it's like less appealing, but the conversations I have are pretty evergreen. You know, you can listen to them 3 years later, you can listen to them 2 weeks later. It doesn't matter as long as you're diving in. So thank you. But anyways, I got a little sidetracked. Finn came on the show and he came over to my house and we had a really, really deep discussion on like religion and positivity and just so much cool stuff. Finn, he is the digital marketer. I'm not exactly sure his title. I asked him at some point in the conversation of URM Academy, which is a online school that basically teaches you how to become really good at engineering from either recording your own bands, recording other bands. It's really, really an awesome program that, some of our mutual friends have built, and now Finn is helping them out to basically make sure that people are aware of this thing. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to have him on as well, because I really believe in this company's mission of trying to make sure that people, you know, get better at what it is that they're interested in, and offering real services from that perspective, and not just, you know, blowing smoke and mirrors around. So anyways, that's Finn, and we get into it, but let's talk about some other things first. First and foremost, you need to visit our web partner, noecho.net, please, because they are offering great content on a very regular basis. So please do that. And I also have to mention Rockabilia. I know you're probably like, yo, I get it, for those of you that listen to it, the show, on a week-to-week basis. But if you don't, and you're just diving in, you need to visit rockabilia.com. And what do? They sell awesome, awesome band merch. And they sell over 500,000 items of band merch from everybody from, Slayer and Mastodon, Misfits. You can think of a band and you can dive into their archives and you will probably be able to find a piece of merch. Like I was just tripping across Bane the other day on their site and was like, oh yeah, that's cool. They got a bunch of Bane merch. And what they also do is they officially license all of these images and items, and whatever it is that they're producing is legit. It's not crappy bootleg stuff, because I've made the mistake before of buying some bootleg merch on whether it's like Amazon or other places, and 99.9% of the time it's the worst thing possible. Like whatever it is I paid for, it is not worth it. And then not to mention the fact that these bands are not seeing the money, and frankly that is one of the main sources of revenue for bands, is their merch, whether it's touring and selling it. It's crucial to their existence. So go to rockabilia.com. I will give you 15% off by using the code PC100 words or less. So please dive onto Rockabilia's site, find some merch. Let me get you 15% off. Use that code. And thank you, Rockabilia. We've appreciated your support over the past couple months. And I like what they do. So good job, Rockabilia. Now, yeah, Finn, like I said, he's a punk and hardcore kid. That's why he is on this show. And he's done a lot of cool, interesting things that are, involved in the more sort of corporate world, whether that's like his old design work with he worked for Abercrombie & Fitch. Yes, that's what he did. And then he also worked for Creative Live for a while, which is another awesome online teaching portal, which we talk a lot about that. They primarily focus on like photography, but he did some music stuff over there that was really, really cool. So anyways, Finn's just a great guy and we had a fun conversation. So that is what we were doing, and here he is.
This will be you. You were one of like literally the first guests. I think you were the sixth episode. I believe so.
Yeah.
And obviously a lot has changed in your life since we discussed then, because you were living in the Midwest.
Yeah.
And then you moved out to Seattle.
Yep.
To work for Creative Live.
Yep. Where I grew up.
Where
so
you
I
grew
returned.
Up. That's true. That's true. Yeah. You boomeranged back to.
It's important for me to clarify that, you know, there's nothing wrong with the Midwest, but
nope. It's
not my home. And if you've ever had that fish out of water feeling, you know that it can be hard to, makes it harder to be happy when you're in that fish out of water kind of environment.
Right. And you were out there for what, 10? 10,
off 12? And on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Around that.
Yeah. And that was I'm sure in some respects it was an isolating experience, just because you were away from, like you said, the fish out of water. Like you were not connected to anybody from family. Like you were just like, you had your work friends and
right.
then you had your internet friends.
Yeah.
And I'm sure, like, did that mess with your brain at all as you were kind of like navigating through that, like the fish out of water experience you're talking about?
Well, you have friends that come in from like New York or Philadelphia or something like that to Southern California.
Right.
And, you know, I'm sure, you know, they all freak out. Why does everyone here move so slow? And why is everyone here so laid back? You know, all that stuff.
Right, right.
It's not about, whether one is better or worse. It's just you if you grow up in a certain environment, you get used to that like pace of life and state of mind. And when you're in a situation where, you know, where the you're the only one that looks at the world in a certain way, or it feels like that, then yeah, it's, you know, at least hard for me. Maybe some people don't mind it, but it's hard for me.
Right. Yeah. Especially too, when you are, when it, the change happens, like, you know, you do it on your own accord. You know, like, oh, I'm going to pursue this job, or I'm going to pursue school or whatever.
Or nothing, like I did. That's true. So, you know, this is like a classic hardcore kid move. Anybody listening to this, sure, if you are a hardcore kid, probably 75% of you made a stupid mistake very similar to this, which is you decide that wherever you grew up sucks for whatever reason, and you should move somewhere else because once you move somewhere else, everything is going to be different and awesome.
It will change completely.
Exactly. The problem is where you live, not you. So I moved when I was 18. I moved from Seattle to Cleveland because I knew some people in Cleveland, rah, rah, rah.
Sure.
And that was a really bad idea.
Yeah.
But maybe it wasn't. You know, I learned a lot from it.
Right.
Definitely, yeah, I saw a whole part of, you know, the country that I'd never been exposed to and probably wouldn't have otherwise. Right. So that was great. But yeah, hardcore kids moving. If you're younger and you're listening to this and you're thinking about moving, don't do it.
Right. Well, especially too, like if you are going from like, I feel it's probably a different story if you live in a place like, you know, Farmington, Illinois, like if you are at a place that is devoid of culture.
Sure.
And you don't feel like you're anchored to anything.
Yeah.
Well, it makes, I mean, you're anchored to, you know, your local high school or whatever, but like the bigger world's out there. But it's like, if you're moving from Seattle to Cleveland, like it's like, there's a lot of stuff to do in Seattle. Like,
yeah. Well, there wasn't nearly as much back then.
True.
And to be fair, the hardcore scene, which is, you know, the center of my world back then.
Right.
The hardcore scene in Cleveland was way better than the one in Seattle back then. There was, you know, one band basically that, you know, was on the map in Seattle back then, which was Undertow.
Sure. But don't forget Brotherhood. But
well, no, they were gone by then.
It's true. Undertow was definitely,
In 96, Brotherhood was long gone, and Undertow was the band that mattered back then.
That's true. Yeah. And then the upshift that you can have in regards to like, oh yeah, like there's a, you know, there's not only just one band, there's a lot of stuff going on out there.
Yeah. And bands didn't tour in Seattle back then because, I mean, even now they still sometimes don't. But it was really, you know, off the beaten path back then. And, you know, every year somebody would almost die going over the mountains. You know, I remember Earth Crisis was the first, I don't remember who else, but, you know, a bunch of people got in accidents going over the mountains, in the winter, which is scary. So, yeah, lots of bands didn't play there. And then I moved to Cleveland, and every band plays Cleveland because it's
the throughway. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's in the middle of everything. It's super close to a whole bunch of other cities. So I got to see all the bands that never played Seattle, which was at the time really cool.
Yeah. Did you experience any of the, like the, because obviously Cleveland, you know, became a focal point for, you know, how crazy these bands were from either One Life Crew or Integrity. Yeah. And like, did you experience that sense of kind of like, whoa, these dudes are kind of scary?
No, because they were actually really friendly to me.
Right. Which is amazing.
I mean, maybe, you know, I don't really know any of them personally. I mean, I said, you know, I'd see them at shows back in the day.
Right.
But they were all really friendly to me.
That's cool.
I'm sure other people have good reason maybe not to like them, but they were always super friendly to me.
Yeah.
And that's been the case to me. It's kind of ironic that in my experience, the people who everyone else said were the awful, mean bullies, you know, fill in the blank, tough guy, hardcore band, were always really nice to me. And the people who were calling the other people bullies were the buttholes.
Right.
You know,
were just the worst.
Totally. Yeah, they were really mean. Like all the, like, you know, cool guy, Spock haircut, you know, type Midwestern emo people that said One Life Crew and Integrity were horrible people.
Right.
They were the ones who were judgmental and mean and cliquish and unwelcoming in my personal experience.
Yeah. No, I mean that, well, especially too, if you're talking about the way that a lot of those scenes kind of came up and transpired, it was very exclusionary, it wasn't a matter of, it was like, hey, we're taking our corner of the map from, you know, focusing on San Diego. It's like, yeah, we'll take, you know, your Locust, your Klickitatikatawi, like everything of these bands, and we're going to do our own thing.
Right.
We don't need to include anybody else.
Right.
And
right.
by default, that made it very, it was such a distinct, because I mean, so many of those bands played in Orange County.
Yeah.
And I remember it was like, I never didn't feel like not welcome at those shows.
Right.
But it was just like, oh yeah, like I'm one of very few quote unquote hardcore kids
right.
that are at this show.
They weren't going out of their way to make you feel welcome.
No, no. And it wasn't like, I mean, if I showed up in like, you know, a Madball jersey and basketball shorts, like, you know, clearly people would have been like, yo, what's up with that guy? I mean, but right. I just look like roughly how I do now.
Right.
So there's no posturing from that perspective, right. But it was very like, hey, we're doing our own thing. Like you guys can do your own thing. And yeah. That's cool. But
it kind of reminds me of like there's a lot of these tropes that are set by the quote unquote tastemakers that I think don't quite map to reality. One of those being like so in movies, there's this trope of the, you know, fake plastic girls and their prep jock boyfriends that bully everybody else and treat them like shit and just want to rain on your fucking parade right. for the sake of doing it. Right.
Sure.
And these poor artsy kids just want to live their lives, but all these damn jocks
get in their way. Right?
Exactly. Are just out there to rain on their parade. And so many people, you know, you just sort of accept that that's true. Well, it's in a movie. I guess that's what it is. And
totally.
So then they plant the seed in your brain that that's the situation. And so you become, you know, you see the quote unquote jocks as the enemy. And when you treat them like the enemy, guess what? They're probably not going to like you that much.
Totally.
And so it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. And I just for whatever reason, I've never really thought that way. Mm-hmm. So I was cool with those people. It's not like we hung out, but like I was cool with those people in high school, probably because
right.
I liked Pantera and sort of the people on our football team. And
sure.
So we were
cool. Like there's different interests, like there's diverging interests and you can both still coexist in the same
yeah.
world and not be throwing stones at one another. You can just be like, oh yeah, that's your weird thing.
Yeah.
And like, oh wow, I'm not into football at all. Like that's your thing.
But I think, you know, and then thinking about it now as an adult where I understand these things a lot better, I go, well, let's think about who writes movies.
Yeah.
Who are the people that like author this culture?
Yeah.
They're not like functional, like healthy, happy people.
Yeah.
You know, they're dysfunctional, angry, bitter people who want to paint this picture of, well, the reason I'm unhappy is because yeah. all these awful people hated me in high school for no reason.
Right.
And so they tell the story. And so I think, you know, I think that's, there's a lot of that in culture
yeah.
The people who author culture being these angry, bitter, dysfunctional people that paint a picture that does not actually exist.
I know. And it is interesting too, on that same note, the notion that now obviously, you know, nerd culture is mainstream culture
yeah.
and it has been now for whatever, 10 plus years. And so like how everyone's had to sort of reconcile with that in their brains to be like, okay, these sort of niche things are now like not niche at all.
Right.
Like it's 100% cool to be obsessed with Star Wars. Like everybody. Like,
yes.
It's totally fine.
Yep.
And then how that sort of shifts the balance of power where it's just like, I mean, you know, look at like a dude like Guillermo del Toro and it's like,
yeah.
that guy could not be more of a shut in. Like,
right.
but everyone's just like, man, a visionary director. And like, of right. course he is. He is yeah. unbelievable. But it's so funny how people have to like grapple with that where it's just like, oh man, like I guess that's the world we live in now.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely, it's a different place. So
yeah.
The inmates are running the asylum now.
I know, exactly. And no one knows it. Yeah. It's like, well, I guess this person has a very unique take and voice. I mean, I guess we need to listen to them now.
Well, you know, another good example of that is I remember I would read all these stories and zines about and stuff about how awful Earth Crisis were as
right.
like humans.
Totally.
There were these horrible, violent people. They hit my friend with a brick.
Right.
You know, all he was doing was just standing outside the venue holding somebody else's beer.
Right.
He doesn't even drink. He's straight edge. And they hit him in the side of the head with an axe handle
right.
just totally. For holding a beer.
Right. And then beat him on the floor with a grocery divider.
Right. yeah. And you'd hear, wow. And, you know, I'm 15 or something. So I assume if I read it in a zine, it must be mostly true.
Sure.
Wow, these guys must be horrible monsters. And, you know, of course, then you meet them. And if you've ever met anybody in Earth Crisis, you know that like that couldn't possibly be farther from the truth.
Totally.
You know,
it's a game of telephone that happens.
Right. Yeah, I mean, although I will tell, here's an Earth Crisis story I will tell where they did whack somebody.
it happens from time to time.
Here is a Cleveland story for you. So
please.
I saw, I think it was Earth Crisis, Madball, and Scarhead, I think.
That's a good lineup.
Yeah, it's awesome. this was in 97, I think.
Okay, yeah.
And I don't remember what, I don't remember why there was a scuffle.
Sure, yeah.
But there was. I think one of those guys was throwing meat at them or something like that.
Okay, you know? Of course, yeah.
You know,
yeah, you combine, yeah. You're combining two disparate elements together.
Yeah, like powder keg plus match.
Something will explode.
Yeah. So anyway, for whatever reason, you know, it jumped off, as they say. Mm-hmm. And Ian from Earth Crisis was trying to hit somebody with his base.
Sure. Like, he is the bulldog.
Yes. He was trying to hit Chubby Fresh, I think, maybe. I don't know.
Sure.
I could be wrong about that, so don't quote me on
it. Yeah, no quoting.
He was trying to hit somebody, but unfortunately, he just fucking cracked some poor little vegan kid like in the head. Like, he had a big gash on his head, like, you know, maybe 4 inches long or something. He's sitting on the side of the stage, holding his head, like, and his blood is dripping into his hands.
He's like, I just went to a show.
Yeah. And Ian's like, fuck, sorry, man.
Yeah. Do you want a shirt?
Right. Yeah.
That's basically the only way that you could help a person immediately is be like, well, hey, do you want a shirt? I'll get you a towel. Like, I don't really know what to do here.
Right. So, you know, if there were Earth Crisis whackings, you know, that's the only thing I ever saw.
You witnessed, right. A complete accidental swing and a miss.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's the same as like when I was playing baseball in fourth grade and Chris Holt was at bat. And he hit some other kid, you know, he like let loose, you know, let go of the bat when he swung and hit some kid inside of the head. Same thing.
Freak accident. Yeah.
Totally. We don't call Chris Holt a bully.
Right. That was just an injury on the sporting field.
Exactly.
The thing that always struck me about you too, like, you know, ever since we became close and friends is like you're thoughtful. And I think a lot of people that, I mean, as you grow older, obviously, like you were mentioning earlier, you know, you have a better perspective and you understand why you were into certain things. And I don't know, it just seems like you've always kind of put thought into stuff. Like, I don't know. It just doesn't, I know that's kind of a vague question, but like, yeah.
I was actually just talking. So we were just talking about thoughtfulness with Johnny Minardi this morning.
Sure.
Because I think he's a very thoughtful guy. Mm-hmm. And he used to work for Equal Vision. So as some people who are listening to this will know, Equal Vision started out as a Krishna label back in the day to put out Shelter and 108 or so. I don't know what it was. But so the thing that really like flipped the switch in my head when I was a kid. So my mom was into a lot of that stuff when I was a kid. But of course, I didn't listen because it was my mom.
Sure. Like actual Hare Krishna or like just sort of spirituality in general?
Spirituality. But like the only thing that I still have from, you know, anything, like I don't have any of my old records or zines or anything. Like the only possession I still have from more than 10 years ago is a book that my mom gave me called Whispers from Eternity.
Okay.
Which is by a guy named Paramahansa Yogananda, who is like this Indian spiritualist drawing from like the, you know, Hindu and Christian tradition. Mm-hmm. And the book is kind of about the union of those two things.
Okay.
So not exactly Krishna, but not.
Right, totally.
I was very familiar with that stuff from an early age. And then, you know, I discovered Shelter because I loved Youth of Today. Mm-hmm. And it clicked for me in a way that it probably didn't for almost anybody else. Because, you know, Krishna Core was a trend back then.
It was.
But I had heard about that stuff for years before.
You had a previous exposure to it.
Right. Yeah. Like, you know, there's the band Veil of Maya and there's the cynic song Veil of Maya.
Right.
I had heard the term Veil of Maya for years from my mom.
Right.
You know, before. So when I would hear like Shelter or Downset or 108 talk about this stuff, like I understood it in a way that probably not too many other like white Americans.
Totally. You know? Yeah. It was just kind of like surface level. Like, I mean, it would be like, because I wasn't like you in that exposure. It was definitely for me like being exposed to Shelter in 108 where I was kind of like, this is the first time I kind of heard of this.
Yeah.
But then, you're immediately being like, well, like, I was that's like, interesting.
Oh, yeah, I totally get this. Like,
you're like, oh, like, I get this already.
Mosh riffs and like the Veil of Maya. This makes perfect sense to me.
Totally.
Which in hindsight is so weird because like probably literally one of the only 15-year-olds, you know, in 1994 92, you know, that like understood
a pre-existing knowledge of this stuff
of those two things
right
you know, unheard of back then. But so I got like Ray Capo's book In Defense of Reality and read a lot of that stuff, and then That's, you know, of course I didn't listen to it because it was my mom, but when Ray Capo said it, I was all ears.
Because yeah, he's not your mom, right, or your father. Right.
Even though he was not saying anything really different at all. I mean, it's literally the same shit my mom said. But when my mom talks about Maya, I don't want to hear it.
Shut down.
When
right.
Ray and Porcel tell me about it,
I'm all great. In.
Yeah.
Right.
And so now that I've talked about this with you and with Ryan Downey, and it's interesting to me that a lot of the stuff back then, like, so the podcast that you guys did was awesome, and he had a good term for it, I think, was like Seekers.
Yeah.
That there was a group, and they probably still exist. There's probably a new version of it, but there was this group of seekers back then that were exploring a lot of ideas that, you know, 25 years later are now mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
So the stuff that you would read in Shelter lyrics in 1990 is stuff that you would hear Arianna Huffington talk about now, or Tim Ferriss or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I'm very grateful that I was exposed to that back then.
Sure.
Because it's, you know, I'm far from perfect person, but I'm a lot better now than I was 20 years ago, and I have always put in work on like correcting my thinking, you know, on a daily basis ever since I was a child.
Yeah.
Because of my mom.
Yeah.
Actually planted that seed in me. And I'm very grateful to be exposed to those ideas back then.
Yeah.
So this is all a long way of getting back to the idea of like thoughtfulness that you asked about.
Yep.
And I've always tried, I guess that's just a thing that my mom planted in my brain. And I've always gravitated towards the part of our culture, the few people there that are talking about that stuff.
Right.
They're out there. And now that I think about it in hindsight, like, man, they were ahead of their fucking time.
Totally.
Like, do you know, you know, the band Downset, right?
Absolutely.
Have you listened to the lyrics at all?
Yeah. I mean, at one point, yes.
Like,
but
man, that's some deep, like, that is some really,
yeah,
like pretty deep shit.
Totally.
Like
this, the idea that, I mean, cause obviously, you know, as you start to like explore your own musical taste and cultural path, and, you know, the more ideas that you shove into your head, the better, in my opinion,
yeah,
because then all you're doing is getting a lay of the land. You'd be like, okay, I see what that is. I don't agree with that. I see what that is. Like, that's kind of cool. Let's see if, yeah, I can court, or just like you said, look into it more and be exposed to it.
Right.
Because then that way you're actually going to be, hopefully a better, more well-rounded person, even though,
right,
you don't know what it means. Like,
right,
you know, when you first start being like, well, I'm straight edge, and be like, well, like, do you know what that actually means? Like, no, I just don't drink. And it's like, right, well, there's a whole lot that
smoke sometimes, but
totally. So it's like
straight edge, like 5 days a week on the weekends. I'll, you know,
yeah, yeah, it's fine. It's
I'll
fine.
Relax, but yeah.
But yeah, but being exposed to those things, like you said, is incredibly important. And especially just like kind of the, not only just the surface level stuff, but like, oh, here, like, I mean, you know, bands obviously used to have literature at their tables and books and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it was like, That is unbelievable. That's like, right, such a, right, monumental portion of our lives, being exposed to the idea. It's like, I'll never forget, like, that band Buried Inside.
Uh-huh.
They, you know, their first record was called like Chronoclast. And basically they were challenging the idea of time as a reality and as like a construct. And I just remember like my 18, 19 year old brain being like, time, yeah, isn't real. And I was,
wait,
just like,
what?
Yeah, dude. I was like, holy shit, like, this is insane. Yeah. But yeah, had the same sort of like aha moment, yeah, that you have, you know, as you're being like, oh yeah, like, I already know what, like you said, the veil of mind, like all these, yeah, things, like, I already kind of have, your head was already peeking in there, you know?
Yeah. I was talking about this again this morning. There's a Shelter song called Photographs Lie. I don't know if you know it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's from, I don't know, 91 or something like that, 92. Yeah. And it's about how you shouldn't compare yourself to the photos you see in magazines. It's going to make you feel shitty about your life because, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Totally.
You get the idea. That song, like, is about Instagram.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
And, like, how ahead of, like, to me, that is very impressive that a hardcore band wrote that song in 1991 or whatever.
Totally.
And it is more relevant than ever,
right,
in 2018.
And they were rallying against fashion magazines.
But it's the same.
Same principle.
The idea is that they understood a facet of human psychology.
Yeah.
You know, that manifested itself in a different way in 1991 than it does today.
Exactly.
But I'm just very grateful that I was exposed to that stuff, you know, at that age, that I've been thinking that that I have been thinking about that for 25 years.
Totally. It's still, you still carry it with you. Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't, you know, I didn't get blindsided by Instagram, you know, the, right, that other people, you know, seriously.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally.
Or, you know, like you and Ryan were talking about, you know, I was never hardline, but I was into a lot of that stuff back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And they were talking about a lot of things like, you know, that what we would call intersectionality today, mm-hmm. and cultural imperialism and stuff like that. We have different words for it today, but they were talking about that stuff, you know, in the early 90s, mm-hmm. 20 years before anybody in the mainstream had ever even considered those concepts.
Totally. In the same way that you know, we were talking about earlier, where it's just like, you know, nerd culture, nerd ideas yeah. have now bubbled up. And it's like right. the same idea where it's like these constructs and these questions that were being discussed in, you know, rooms across the country to yeah. 100 people. It's like all it does is that, I mean, and it's so exciting where it's like you can look at so many people who are, you know, now adults like you and I that are involved in a variety of different things from a professional perspective. We can bring all of that experience and people would just be like,
yeah.
oh, well, like, oh, that's weird what you're into. But it's just like, well, yeah, like,
have yes, you ever it is of- weird, but yeah. I've been doing it for a long time.
Exactly. No, totally. And it's so cool when you see that sort of, you know, whatever punk, hardcore, DIY culture, and not just like, you know, the sort of surface level stuff, but like you see that being, you know, interplayed across the spectrum yeah. of businesses. And it's like, that's really cool.
Yeah, I'm glad that all these ideas have become more mainstream. And, you mm-hmm. know, the way that we talked about them in hardcore bands in 1992 was,
right.
you know, rough around the edges.
Absolutely. Yeah.
you know?
Yeah, not the best presentation maybe. Yeah.
yeah. And the ideas weren't fully baked and we were like literally children. So,
totally.
You know, our, yeah, I mean, there was a lot of, we said it in a lot of stupid ways, but,
right.
you know, we were seeking out the truth. Which to me is pretty cool that there were like, when it was way harder to do back then, like by writing fucking letters to people.
yeah, totally. You know? By looking at the footnotes of a book, right?
yeah, exactly.
totally.
Like if you wanted to find the truth back then, you were fucking after it. You were getting after it, you know? It
was totally.
Hard. And I'm not being the old guy saying like, oh,
the internet right. makes it easy. Yeah,
yeah. Right. But it does, which I think is a good thing.
Totally.
But my point is, you know, that the people who were like, who were going to those lengths back then were very dedicated people, oftentimes really weird.
Yeah, totally. Well, I weird, but then all I think the more important factor is just obsessive, you know?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
The obsessiveness of
right.
when you're getting into stuff, you're not just being like, oh yeah, like I'm into this thing. You're just like, I am literally consumed by it.
Yeah.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different things that stress us out, right? Like maybe it's something really, really small, like, man, that parking space, it's always taken. And I wish that I would be able to like get it instead of, you know, this person that maybe, you know, is the most courteous and considerate. I know that's something very random, but it's true. We all experience different things throughout the day that trigger us in so many different ways. And there are many times where I have been like, I wish that I had a spot or a repository for me to, you know, get this stuff off of my chest. Because if you bottle it up, that is no bueno. And then all of a sudden you explode on a coworker or a friend or a family member being like, the parking spot. And people are like, what are you talking about? That is where therapy comes in. And I love working with BetterHelp because I'm a huge advocate for therapy, broadly speaking. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, please give BetterHelp a try. It is so easy because it's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you do is fill out a brief questionnaire and then you get matched with a licensed therapist. And if you are not vibing with the therapist for any reason, you can switch it out at no additional charge. Get things off of your chest with BetterHelp. So visit betterhelp.com/Ray today to get 10% off of your first month. That's betterhelp.com/Ray.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet.
BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
What if AI could help your business deliver mission-critical outcomes with speed? With IBM Consulting, your business can design, build, and scale trusted AI using Watson X, and modernize the way you work to accelerate real impact. Let's create AI that transforms your business. Learn more at ibm.com/consulting. IBM. Let's create.
And so I've kind of come like full circle in this is like, so back in the day I was really into it, and then I thought it was really stupid.
Sure.
Because like, God, it was so crude and we were talking about it in such stupid ways and blah, yeah. blah, blah, which is all true.
Yeah.
But now I've come full circle on it and I've said, yeah, it was a little bit rough around the edges, but man, it's fucking cool that we were trying. And I'm so grateful that I've had 20 years to think about these things that other people maybe are only being exposed to now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because
yeah.
these are complex, challenging things that it takes a long time to digest and internalize and
right.
apply to your own life. So I'm grateful that I got a head start on it. I guess that's what it comes down to.
Yeah, no, that's incredible.
In a world where everyone is confined to their homes, society begins its largest bin watch to date. In the hallowed library of Hulu, or perhaps on a shelf of DVDs you haven't looked at in a decade, is a show that perfectly encapsulates life in the early aughts and launched a friendship that would inspire millions. Hi, I'm Zach Braff.
And I'm Donald Faison.
In 2001, we starred in Scrubs, a sitcom that revealed a glimpse of what it was like to survive a medical internship. As Turk and JD, we explored guy love.
Nearly 20 years later, a lot has changed. We're not supermen, but we're still best friends.
Eh.
Given the mandatory lockdown, there's no better time to relive the series that brought us together in the first place. And we're doing it with a podcast.
That's right, people. We're going to bring friends and crew members and fellow cast members and writers. And guess what? We're going to even invite some of you to call into the podcast and ask all the questions you want of the entire Sacred Heart staff.
Join us for Fake Doctors, Real Friends on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I mean, and I see a lot of that obviously in what you're doing with, you know, the punk rock NBA stuff where it's like, because the, you know, there's always that sort of like ickiness as far as like, you know, motivational speaker stuff kind of goes, because it's like, you know, you like whatever, people look at, you know, Tony Robbins and all these other people who it's just like, yes, they're inspiring. Yes. They're touching people in ways that might not have been touched if they did not view this person, but especially from our culture, it's just always like, oh, like, I don't know. No one's an authority unless you're, you know, Ian Kai or whatever.
Well, that's one of the biggest blind spots that our culture has, which we do have some.
Yeah.
And one of them is, for whatever reason, we embrace cynicism, you know.
It's true.
And that it's cool to roll your eyes and call something bullshit. And it's not cool to be sincere about anything other than, like, being angry.
Sure.
Which, you know, has obviously questioning authority has a lot of merit and it's done a lot of good things, but it's also poisonous when it makes you question something that you should be listening to. And just in general, I think it's poisonous that we make fun of people who are sincere. I mean, to use Earth Crisis and Shelter as two examples, how much shit did they take in the 90s for being so sincere much. About something?
Totally. For standing like on the top of a mountain of a principle.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Whether you agree with like, and it wasn't that people disagreed with them necessarily. Right. They were just mocking the fact that they cared.
Sure.
You know?
Right. So like, they embodied this thing.
Yeah. That's what people were objecting to. Not whether they were vegan or Krishna. They were objecting to the fact that these people were like sincere about something.
Totally.
And that is, that's not good.
No, no,
that's not a good impulse.
Right.
And you see that in a lot of popular culture. It's certainly not unique to hardcore, but I think there's something, there's that like anti-authoritarian element to our world that has a really negative consequence in that way.
Sure.
Of, you know, rolling your eyes at somebody like Tony Robbins, who, whether you like his message or not, like, I'm not it doesn't really do anything for me personally.
Sure.
But it's undeniable that he's helped tons of people.
Totally. He's affecting change. Yeah. Yeah. In the same, like I, in like looking at, cause what I think it was earlier last year that Missing Richard Simmons podcast came out.
Yeah.
And you know, one of the episodes focused on him as far as his sort of not just philanthropy, but like how he was so engaged with the people that came, like, you know, when he was massive and touring malls and stuff like that. But
yeah,
just like a little anecdotal story of just like he would keep in touch with these people for years, like, you know, calling them once a month to be like, hey, how is your weight journey going? And it's like, dude, are you kidding me? Like, here's this guy who's like, you know, a millionaire many times over, and he's engaged like that. And it's like, who's to say that a person like, you know, Tony Robbins or any of these other people that get, you know, lambasted for, like you said, their sort of sincerity, that they're not doing some version of that, you know? And it's like, yes, of course there are people who are using their platform for ill and are just, you know, just trying to make money.
Yeah. Off of people. Or get, you know, they want to be in the, spotlight and they want to,
the ego gratification.
They want to feel like they're a guru.
Right. You know? Exactly. But at the core of it, it's like, if they truly are helping people, it's like, you can't fault them for that.
Or you shouldn't.
You should, right. Yeah. No, that's true. You should, yeah, you shouldn't.
Yeah. And unfortunately, I think that was like a big turning point for me about 5 years ago, as I just kind of woke up almost overnight and just didn't want to be cynical anymore.
Yeah.
I just didn't want to like talk shit on things anymore and didn't want to I'm not feeling that anymore.
Right.
And I just let go of that and just said, I'm going to be sincere about things. Not because I woke up like, today, I'm going to be the sincere guy. I was just like, I'm just over being cynical. It doesn't feel good.
Yeah.
It doesn't make me happy. And that was like felt like I just, you know, like your headlights get all like yucky and gross on your car. Like, I don't know what
just
it is.
Just cleaned it off. Yeah.
You know, you get that stuff from AutoZone where you just wipe it off.
Sure.
You're like, now great. They're clear. I just felt like I did that to my brain.
Right.
By not being cynical anymore. And you see this, like, I think we have a lack of empathy in general, like as a culture. And part of that is youth, I think, because when I was younger, I was not very empathetic.
Yeah.
You know, I've.
That's very true. That's definitely a muscle that gets entertained over time.
Especially in young men.
Absolutely.
We are not very good at being empathetic.
No. Yeah. Not a quality that gets nurtured, pet, nourished. It's definitely something that is more,
that's, and part of that is probably biology, but part of it is culture too, is like,
sure.
Cause it goes back to the sincerity thing. It's not cool for a young guy to be like, oh, something bad happened to this stranger, man, that's a bummer. I hope everything's okay.
Totally. How can I help?
Yeah. Like when I used to see like a car, you know, if I was stuck in traffic cause there was a car accident, I was younger.
Right.
I'd be like, God damn it.
Right.
And now I think,
I hope everyone's all right.
Yeah. I'm like, fuck, that sucks. Like, yeah, I got to sit in traffic for 20 minutes, but I'd rather be sitting in traffic than be in that accident.
Right. Their day is exponentially worse than mine.
Yeah. Or like I've seen, do you remember Tila Tequila?
Of course.
So, you know, she's had a lot of kind of public meltdowns on social media.
Sure.
And people are always laughing at her for it.
Of course.
And it bums me out because she's obviously mentally ill.
Yeah.
I know she had a stroke, so she might be brain damaged as well.
Right.
And it's not funny. It's horrible. Like, how would you feel if that was your sister or something?
Of course.
You know? Or
Put it a little closer to you and see how you'd feel.
Yeah. And I would have been the one to make fun of her when I was younger.
Of course.
For sure.
Right.
And so I guess my larger point is that, I think it's unfortunate that in our culture in particular, like, you know, the sort of angry alternative music subculture,
exactly.
there's lots of songs telling you why you should be angry, and there's not very many songs telling you why maybe you shouldn't be so angry.
Right.
Or not maybe should or shouldn't.
Right.
But like why you might want to consider letting go of that anger.
And to your point too, I think that because a lot of people that would look at, you know, positivity and you know, all of that's wrapped up in regards to either a lyrical expression or the way that bands are, is like, you know, it's a cliche where it's just like, obviously if you see a quote unquote old school hardcore band in 2018 you know, singing about those things. You'd be like, I've heard this for 25 plus years.
Yeah.
But then a band that expresses themselves from an anger standpoint.
Right.
There still is a critical eye on the cliche-ness of anger, but it's definitely far less. Like, there's much more of a pass that's given to that than just like, oh, dude, like, this band just cliches on top of cliches. It's like, well, yeah, but like, there's only so many ways you can express that.
Yeah, you can write a song about how it's bullshit that society wants to tell you what to do.
Right.
Like, and you'll always get a pat on the back. You know,
totally. Totally. That's true. Yeah, but if you're writing a quote unquote stereotypical positivity song, it's just like, oh yeah, well, that's, you know,
right.
Obviously every band has done that at some point.
Yeah. And I guess I beat myself up a lot for dumb things that I've thought and done in the past, but I would give myself credit that I never really fell into that. Like, I've never, even when I was, you know, like, I grew up and I was listening to a lot of metal, like, you know, Sepultura and The Accused and stuff like that.
Right.
And then I somehow or another heard like Gorilla Biscuits and Youth of Today when I was like 14. I was like, whoa, okay, this is
right. This is great.
Yeah. This is what I'm after. Like, there's that line in the song Youth of Today, which like is still one of my favorite lines ever. It's like, you know, cause like my family has a lot of like, you know, dysfunctional relationships with substances in it. So I've seen that, I've seen a lot of lives ruined from that. So, from the age of, you know, from when I was a child, I always thought that was stupid.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's that line in that song you used today. It's living fast and dying young was just a fad for fucking losers who didn't care.
Right.
And I was like, oh my God, like, this hell is the coolest fucking thing I've ever heard in my life.
Totally. I loved that when you got that part of your brain activated where you were just like, I mean, same way for you today for me, but then like Uniform Choice for me was so huge just because they were from Orange County and like, you know, the lineage with Ignite and everything. But I just remember where it's just like, you know, the whole notion of like, you know, you booze, you lose. And I was just like, fuck yeah, you do. Like, right. Of course you do. It's like, I love that little part of your brain where it's just like, you are given voice to that thing that's in your head. That's like, oh my gosh. Yeah, you're right.
Well, it's so important. And this is another reason why I think it's important for, you know, for us to, I guess push back on the like cynicism trend is that there's lots of kids who are like that, who are like 13 or 14 or 15, whatever, like young kids. And when you're that age, like, you care a lot what someone who's like 20 thinks.
Of course.
You know, if the 21 year olds in your scene say this is cool, you don't dare challenge that. Even if you're thinking it in your head.
Totally.
You wouldn't dare, like,
you wouldn't publicly proclaim that.
Absolutely not.
No way. Yeah. You wouldn't go out on a limb and be like, oh, dude, like,
I don't know, man.
Knock Loose isn't that cool, man.
Right.
Or name any other band that is popular at the moment.
But actually, it's worse. It's worse than that. Like, the criticizing the popular thing is easy.
Yeah.
It's praising the unpopular thing that's hard.
That's true. That's way more challenging.
That's way harder. Like, oh, Knock Loose sucks. They're just fucking hype, you know.
Yeah.
You can be the cool guy and do that.
Right.
But it's a lot harder to say, I don't know, man, actually, like, I still think All Time Low is pretty good.
Right, right.
Like, it's some good songs.
Yeah, they'd be like, what? What are you talking about? What do you mean?
Yeah, no, I never stopped listening to, like, I've always listened to 311. I love 311. They're one of my favorite bands.
Amber is the Color of Your Energy.
Right. I feel like that's a great song, but there's a lot of other songs in our catalog that deserve your attention, Ray.
They do. I do. The self-titled blue record,
I'm a little disappointed that you're focusing just on the singles when there's so many great songs in the catalog.
There are so many. I just, it seemed to describe that moment that we were having.
Right.
Because you were very chill, you were relaxed. Yeah. Amber is the Color of Energy right now. That's
I think Transistor is their strongest album,
yeah,
personally, but you know, you're entitled to your opinion.
I am entitled to my opinion, especially being from Southern California. Like, I feel like I can, you know, even though, because they were from Northern Nebraska. California. Oh no, they're from Nebraska.
Uh-huh.
That's right. I knew that, but I felt like they were obviously adopted.
And you
by
call
Southern
yourself
California.
A fan.
I know.
I want to say they moved to San Jose.
That's right. I think that's where, once of they started to blow up. Yeah, it was
you're
weird.
Like, guys, it might sound like that's a cool place, especially in 1990 or whenever they moved there.
Let's pick a sand place.
Yeah, not that one. No.
That's true. That might have been. It's like, yeah, bad maybe move. San Diego. That probably could have been a cooler vibe, especially for what you guys are going
San,
for.
Anything. Not San Mateo, not San Jose.
No. Like, yo, pardon the interruption, but I have to tell you about something that actually this guest is doing
with another old guest of the show, Matt Halperin from the band Periphery. They are doing a class called Sell It Without Selling Out, DIY Marketing for Creatives, taught by Finn and Matt. And so I've watched some of these videos. It's awesome. It's basically a step-by-step guide for designers, artists, videographers, and other creatives to market themselves and get paid to do what they love. So you, I'm talking to you. It's everything they've learned over their past 15 years in playing in bands, and it's distilled into a nice little package for you. Now, to be clear, Finn hasn't played in a band, but he has lived in this music scene for quite some time. And you get 18 video lessons on each step of the marketing process, a 50-page workbook that will guide you through the process of making your own marketing plan, and best of all, lifetime access to the private coaching group where they'll do weekly live check-ins to answer your questions and guide you through the process. Now, please go to sellitwithoutsellingout.com. Sellitwithoutsellingout.com. And you'll be able to register for the class, dive in. Well, it's not a class. Basically, you join this community and you will be able to take your idea from in your head, put it out in the world, and then hopefully you start to build it and it starts to become a thing. That's what I've done with this podcast. It's the thing now, and it's really fun for me to do. So sellitwithoutsellingout.com. All right, go do that. Trust me, you will learn a lot. Okay, now here on with the show.
So, I mean, have you experienced, like, you know, with the, you know, the punk rock MBA yeah. stuff, like you know, I presume that you experience people giving you that sort of sincere positive feedback.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure is engaging for you to obviously keep wanting to yeah. you know, put that out there.
Well, I'll tell you what, I don't get nearly as big of a response from that as I did when I have talked shit on things in the past.
Right. That's true. You know? Right. That's true. You're being positive. People are just like, well, how can you really spread this around?
Yeah, exactly. But I'm okay with that. Like, I don't, and that's a thing that I hope changes, like, in our culture. It probably never will, because our brains are, you know, literally, like, more respond stronger to negatively valenced things than positively valenced things. That's just, like, a fact of, like,
I guess human neurology. Nature. Right,
yeah,
exactly.
It's like, it's more important to make sure you don't get eaten by the tiger.
Right.
So your brain will allocate more cycles to that. But, you know, to me, it's like, it's very easy to get a lot of attention on the internet by talking shit on something. Like, if you want to get a lot of validation, talk shit on Gary Vaynerchuk.
It's true.
You know,
yeah,
and
yeah.
people will tell you you're great.
Because, right. Great. Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
just a huckster.
You're so right.
Right.
You know? He's so full of shit. Rah, rah.
Right.
But I would ask, is that the person you want to be? Like, is that going to, like, what's that worth? It will poison you, like, yeah. To just put out negative energy. Like, think about what that's doing to your brain.
Yeah. yeah, yeah.
You know?
Right. You're literally not adding value to your life.
You're not. It's same as, like, and it's unfortunate, but, like, how many YouTubers are there where all they do is, like, 10 bands I fucking hate.
Yeah.
You know, and they'll get, you know, 100,000 views on it.
Totally.
But, like, where are you going with this?
Yeah.
And I hope that we, as viewers, remember, like, anybody who's listening to this, like, you choose what's popular by what you click on.
Absolutely. So, and it's funny you mentioned that, because there's, you know, one of the most popular YouTube channels out there that I would have never found out about this if it wasn't for just me and my son tripping across this Dude Perfect. So it's like
those guys that do the trick
shots. Yeah, exactly. But it's like that channel and the videos that they put out could not be more awash with positivity.
It's great.
Like, it's just like, I watch it and it's like, it not only is it soothing, but it's fun. It's like, I obviously can watch it with my 6-year-old son.
I threw a marble through a hula hoop from 400
totally.
Yards away.
Totally. And it's just like,
great job.
Right. And it's like every time that they are more successful, which they are, you know, yeah. many, many times over, but it's just like, that's the sort of stuff that is yeah. rad to see,
yeah.
where it's like devoid of cynicism. Like, this is just us having fun. It was funny because when I first started to watch those videos, my brain did the whole, like, these are kind of just jockey guys, like,
right.
whatever. But right. then, like, the more I watched it,
because you,
like,
were lied to by all those people that wrote the teen movies that said
jocks
were bad.
Yeah. And then it was just like, oh no, man, these guys are a chill hang. And
by the way, guess what? The captain of the football team
yeah.
that you're convinced hates you because you had a GBH patch on your backpack didn't know you existed.
No, he was just doing his own thing.
Until
right.
you called him a stupid jock.
Right, right.
And then he was like, Wait, what?
Yeah, totally.
What the fuck are you? What?
Yeah, until you threw your bologna sandwich at him or whatever. Right.
Like, fuck you, man.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
I hope you lose your football game on Friday.
He's like, what? Who are you? Why are you throwing shit at me?
The one thing I want to talk to you about too is the you know, you worked at Creative Live for a long time, and then now you made a shift over to the do you call it the Unstoppable Recording Academy?
URM Academy.
URM Academy. Yeah. Okay. Which, you know, that has already existed and you know, for years before you joining, but you were friends with everybody.
I worked with them like on the side for about a year and a half. So I've been there almost since the beginning.
Totally. I'm sure it was one of those things where it was exciting for you to work on the side and it was fun. Like, you know, did you feel scared as you were kind of leaving a sort of quote unquote, you know, mothership from Creative Live to work with essentially a startup?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
So if anybody is listening to this, you might be familiar with Creative Live. I don't know. Maybe we sponsored this podcast or something.
Yeah, you did. Yeah. We did some ads at some point.
Yeah. Yeah, so Creative Live is an online education platform focusing on creatives, primarily like photographers, graphic designers, but photography is the big one.
Mm-hmm.
Company's got like, I think, $60 million or something in funding now and maybe 150 employees in two offices, Seattle and San Francisco. So it is a startup, but it's like a mid-stage startup where...
Right. There's revenue that's been created. Yeah. Like it's a functional business.
Right. It's not going anywhere. There's no danger of the lights turning off. You know, there's some things to figure out, but like the lights aren't going to turn off. So there's a lot of security there.
Sure.
And backed by some of the, you know, best VCs on the planet, like Social Capital and Greylock, who are
huge
VCs. Right. Those are two top fucking notch.
They've done a good job. Right.
Yeah. You know, you got Reid Hoffman and Chamath Palihapitiya in your corner. You know, those are two titans. So,
yep.
For me to leave, and I worked for the founder and CEO, Chase Jarvis, who I've known for a long time and is an awesome, amazing human being that's done more for me than almost anybody else in my entire life.
Mm-hmm.
So for me to leave that is, super, super scary. Like, man, am I
doing this?
Yeah. Is this, are you sure? So right. It is super scary, but definitely glad I did it. And that's not disparaging Creative Live at all. It's an awesome opportunity. I think it's a great company. I love Chase and everybody else there. Chase and Mac, Mac Azadi, who's the COO, also extremely helpful, taught me a ton of things. I wouldn't be able to do what I do today without the stuff he taught me.
Mm-hmm.
One of the best operators I've ever worked with.
Nice.
And I will say two things about them that were very... that I took away from them is both of those guys never, ever, ever lose their cool, which I have done countless fucking times.
Sure, sure.
Like countless times I have shot myself in the foot by letting my temper get the best of me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've known Chase for 15 years.
Right.
I've worked very closely with him. I have never once heard him lose his temper. I have never once heard him say anything shitty about anybody ever.
That's incredible.
You know, maybe say something critical, like, well, I don't think his work is good enough for this, you know.
Sure.
But appropriately critical. I've never heard him say something nasty about anybody ever. If maybe it's happened, but I wasn't there, I don't know. But I've been around him a lot for 15 years. I've never seen it. I've never seen Mac lose his cool either. And, you know, he is the COO so if anybody who knows what a COO or doesn't know what a COO is, that's mm-hmm. the person who kind of runs the business, the day-to-day of the business. So the person that deals all of the nasty shit, you know,
totally. That's like, that bubbles to their desk.
Exactly. Right? They're mm-hmm. the ultimate problem solver. So right. He deals with more annoying shit than anybody else. Never loses his cool.
It's amazing.
Ever.
Right.
Even when he's entirely justified to do so. So if I learned anything from those two guys, it's that.
Right. Just keep it cool.
Yeah. And so that is something that has served me very well at URM because we're a much smaller company. There's four of us.
Four of you guys, yeah.
Yeah, and some other people, and you know, there's a lot of chaos that when I was younger, or you know, I would have just like lost my shit and started getting pissed off and frustrated and saying nasty shit to people that would have made it way worse.
yeah, totally. that it's not that your impulse has been stamped down to where you're just like, oh yeah, this is not going to serve me well in the long run.
Right. I remember asking Mac about this. I hope he doesn't mind me repeating this, but. I was like, dude, how do you do this? Like, how do you keep your cool all the time? Like, you're just so zen. And he's like, oh, no, not at all. I'm kind of a hothead. Like,
yeah.
I want to throw shit at people and tell them to fuck off all the time. but I don't because it's just pointless. It's not helpful.
Right. Yeah. It's counterproductive.
Yeah. And so I keep that in mind in a lot of those situations now. I'm like, oh, so Mac actually wanted to tear my head off.
Right. Right. But he didn't yell at me.
Show it.
Right. And then I was able to like actually correct the mistake and like learn something from it, as opposed to feel like I want to cry in the bathroom because I got yelled at or whatever.
Right. Yeah. But yeah. So to answer your question, yes, definitely felt fear there. And, you know, I guess I still do, you know, because it's
sure,
a much
yeah.
less established company. So the security isn't there.
Right.
But the upside is also there. And at this point in my life, like that's what I want.
That's what you
want
to pursue. Yeah. Sure. Exactly. Yeah. So, and obviously something that you have more quote unquote stake or control or whatever, but just because it is something that's smaller and that obviously you're helping to build to a larger level.
Right. Like probably I would say the thing that like scares me the most isn't like that I think the lights are going to go off at URM, because that's not going to happen. We're doing great there, but
right.
I'm more like, man, I don't have people like Chase and Mac now to like learn from or ask, like, you know, because both of them are such ninja like negotiators and stuff like that, that I'm like, oh, so so-and-so wants to do this with us. What do you think I should tell them?
Yeah.
And Chase would be like, okay, we'll tell them this and this. And then if they come back with that, then say this. Like, oh, okay.
Oh, good idea. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
cool. I'll do that.
Right.
And I don't have those people.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
If your business needs a new application, then developers will have to write code, a lot of code. If an application needs to be modernized, then you'll need time, resources, and caffeine. If that sounds daunting, then you need Watson X Code Assistant, AI designed to multiply developer productivity so you can generate code quickly. Let's create a more modern foundation for business with Watson X Code Assistant. Learn more at ibm.com/codeassistant. IBM. Let's create.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Anymore. So it's really a test of like, you know, how well can I do this on my own, more or less. And, you know, I have the other guys at the company to rely on who are great.
Of course. But, right.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing now, is it's kind of like I'm in the deep end on my own.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. You're having to rely off of your past experience and hopefully be like, all right, like I remember I encountered something like that a couple of years ago,
yeah,
where I did this thing or whatever. And that it is funny when you actually can reflect on your past experiences. Cause I mean, a lot of the times it's like, you know, you don't think about it when you're in the middle of it. It's not like you're dealing with a crappy situation and you're being like, God, I'm learning so much from
this. I do.
You do?
Yes.
That's cool. Well, I guess when you're yeah, younger, but like now, I mean, now you definitely can.
Yeah.
Like, at least I can.
Yeah.
But when I was younger, it was just kind of like, I have to deal with this horrible band. Like, this is terrible. I don't want to deal with this.
Right. Yeah.
But then you learn afterwards, just like, oh, okay. I see what I did wrong there or whatever.
Yeah. I see what I did wrong. I should have stopped working with bands many years ago.
I should. I've never been more close to drinking in my life than dealing with German straight edge bands.
Oh God,
Caliban and Heaven Shall Burn. Like those are Germans are obviously a notoriously intense people.
Yes.
And, you know, they were gigantic bands over in Europe and then touring the States. It was like, oh yeah, like we're not as big as
gigantic.
Whew, yeah. And having to deal with those repercussions of just, or the, I guess the expectations were not appropriately managed.
Yes. Right.
But in the middle of it, I didn't feel like I was learning anything. But then in retrospect, I was like, oh yes, now I know I learned these things from it.
Yeah. And I'm grateful that now I understand that that's a thing. So when I am in those like stressful situations, I can take a deep breath and I go, okay, this is not so fun right now.
Right. And then you also have the ability to reflect on the fact like, oh, it's not as worse as what I experienced with that thing or whatever.
Yeah.
Which is incredible.
Hey guys, it's Jack O'Brien, co-founder of crack.com. And I host a twice daily news and culture podcast with the funniest person I know, Miles Gray.
What an honor.
It's true, Miles.
Please tell them more about how hilarious I am. Don't tell them about my background in politics as a political operative or anything like that. Just keep going on about the funny.
I wasn't going to.
Okay, that's fine.
Guys, you can come get caught up on what is happening without feeling the life drain out of your soul at the Daily Zeitgeist. You can find us on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever fine podcasts are given away for free.
The last thing I wanted to hit on was the idea that, you know, now that you are, you know, deeply involved and obviously, you know, creating content, you know, working with bands and creating partnerships from this perspective, is it one of those things where, like, are you seeing sort of different, I guess, feedback from the people who are interacting with this platform versus like what you were experiencing at Creative Live as far as like the general public feedback? Just because
I mean
it seems like people are obviously very engaged
with
Unstoppable Recording Academy, and it's not to say that people weren't involved with Creative Live, but it just seems like the sense of community, maybe just because it's more manageable.
So you're saying it seems like people are more engaged with URM than with Creative Live?
It seems like, generally speaking, yes.
Yeah. I think that's true. And the deal is that Creative Live was, you know, its roots are in photography.
Right.
And music, especially recording, is its own. All these like creative communities are very siloed. Mm-hmm. Like even in photography, I didn't know this, but I do now, like wedding photography and like commercial photography don't overlap.
Right.
Like they're two totally separate. The influencers in each of those worlds are totally different. Like nobody does both of them. I mean, there's a couple of people, but like basically nobody does both of those things.
Sure.
So, you know, Creative Live has a ton of equity in the wedding and portrait world.
Mm-hmm.
And less so in other kinds of, you know, in other genres of photography even.
Sure.
Same with graphic design. Like you might think graphic design and photography overlap a lot. They don't.
Right. That's true.
They don't. And even within graphic design, you know, which is my background more than music, actually. I mean, I did graphic design and industrial design for a career for 10 or 12 years.
Right.
So even within graphic design, you know, there's like people that do like hand lettering versus people who are really into, you know, say rock posters,
sure,
or you know, interface design, and those are three very separate silos. So what you're seeing is basically Creative Live has an amazing level of engagement with the wedding and portrait photography world,
mm-hmm.
and less so in other worlds, and it's just very hard to build a relationship with more than one community. And I think I'm proud of what we did with audio stuff at Creative Live, and I think we did build some of a relationship, but when you're able to focus on one thing,
that's true.
I mean, it's the same with a band. How many times have you seen bands, you know, do well in one thing and they're like, you know, we're going to start playing the Red State Rock Festivals.
Of course. Right. Totally. Obviously you saw so many hardcore bands attempting to go to this sort of hair metal route because that was what was happening at the time.
Right.
But yeah.
And it never works or almost never works because people always underestimate or they overestimate the level at which these things overlap, and they don't really overlap very much at all.
Right.
So you're basically starting from zero every time.
Yeah. That's and it's true. Hard That's
enough. It's hard enough to do it once, you know, and it's not even like, oh, they're so stupid. They thought they could do it. It's just like, man, it's hard to do it even once. To do it twice, like to build yourself up in more than one community.
Yeah,
is really, really hard. And that's right. Why, like, I admire Nike so much, because they've done that so many times. Each one of these sports is the same thing.
Totally.
You know, the fact that they can have a brand in golf and in skateboarding is insane.
It is insane. Yeah. I mean, it's like, obviously you have a war chest to invest in these things, but it's like,
well, lots of other people do too, and they failed.
Totally. It always shows the notion where it's just like, well, yes, of course these companies have to spend money to, you know, be successful in different verticals. But it's like, because they are spending the money and because they are focusing on this, it is something of value, you know, and they are supporting a community in ways that, you know, others haven't or aren't, have less of a tolerance for, you know, quote unquote, losing money or whatever.
Like you would see Nike open a little skate park, you know, that only 100 people would go to, or sponsor a hardcore show, or all those little things that
totally,
you know, are brutally, like, those are, that's small potatoes, but you have to do all that stuff. You don't just get to, like, come in there and put the haystack down. You got to build it one needle at a time.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, no, but I see your point, where it's just like the it strikes me too, the people who are in, who are, you know, engaged with the, you know, Unstoppable Recording Academy, it seems like, you know, even though obviously, you know, sort of metal and heavy aggressive music is the focal point, Do the people that are involved with it are, I'm kind of putting them in one of two buckets, where people who are trying to record their own bands better, or then people who are obviously trying to build their own recording career. Is that kind of a appropriate characterization?
Yep.
Okay. And do you, like, I guess, do people kind of, interact with the Academy differently because of that focus?
Yes.
Okay.
So the people who want to make it their career, or even just a serious hobby where they make money from it, you know, maybe, you know, they just want to use a supplemental income or something like that. To them, it's an investment in their future as opposed to a hobby, which is a little bit of a different thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, same way as, like, you know, you spent whatever you spent on this equipment to record this podcast, you know, in a way that you might not if it was just, you know, a hobby, because this is a business for you. You know, so people are willing to invest more in it if they think it's going to be their career, or they want it to be their career, versus if it's just themselves, like, invest more, like, monetarily and in terms of, like, their attention.
Right. And their I'm sure their space where they're recording and what they want to do with that.
Exactly. So those are the people. And I've been kind of surprised at how many people there are who want to make it their career.
Yeah.
There's more of them than I would have guessed.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we had, like, a summit. I don't know if you saw,
I did see those pictures.
In Florida, and we got 100 people to come, and it wasn't even hard to get 100.
That's amazing.
Yeah, from all over the world. And I was like, wow, this is pretty cool. I thought it was going to be difficult, and it was easy to sell it out.
Right.
It was. It was not hard at all.
That's amazing. Just because people obviously wanted to contribute to it and meet. And
that's all these people who are, you know, want to turn this into their career. So for them to spend whatever it costs to come there from Portugal, you know, to them is worth it, because it's going to, and I believe it will, like, cut years off the time it takes to get them there.
Right. And how are you viewing the sort of, you know, bands and partnerships you're trying to create? Like, do you feel like you have to do, I guess, a lot of sort of salesmanship of that to the bands, or, like, do bands kind of, generically speaking, see the value of it?
Actually they do see the value.
That's cool.
You know, there's some people that, you know, that we don't work very much with the bands directly per se. The only thing we need to do with the band is license the song.
Right. Okay.
And we are willing to pay.
Of course.
So, but we're releasing the raw multi-tracks, and there are some, you know, I thought people might be more nervous about that. And they really haven't been, you know, there's a couple people, but by and large, they're like, as long as you'll pay us, you know, a fair licensing rate, then we're cool.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that is because, you know, the co-founders, Joey Sturgis, Al Levy, and Joel Wanasek, you know, they've recorded every fucking
heavy band
you can think of. Like, people know, you know, they have earned the trust of the community.
Sure,
you
know? Right. It's not just some fly-by-night, like, random dude, be like, hey, can you release this? Like, right. No, what are you talking about?
I've known you for 10 years, or I've known of you for 10 years.
Yeah.
I don't think you're going to
Yeah, suddenly, do anything fishy with this.
Think you're suddenly going to turn into a bad actor, so we trust you. And, right. and that's pretty cool, because I was expecting that to maybe be a little bit dicier than it has been.
Right, right. What's been one thing that's, I guess, surprised you the most with the I guess, either it's the community, the people who are interacting with you guys, or, you know, just like, oh, wow, I never thought that this band would agree to do this or whatever. What's been kind of, you know, a surprising thing that you've noticed?
Well, can I give you a long answer?
Please.
Okay. So back in the day, you will probably remember, and other people remember, like the hardcore fests, which were a very different beast than what they are today. So yep. there's stuff like, you know, Sound and Fury and this yes. is hardcore and stuff, which are very, you know, pro.
Yeah. Yeah.
By, you know,
institutions. Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, by the standards of hardcore, those are very, you know, professional things. Right. By that, I mean, you know, the drum sets are mic'd.
Of course. Right. Right. There is some effort put into it. It's not right. just a room that is rented out.
Right. Right. Yeah. But back, you know, in the mid-90s to late-90s, there were fests, but they were way smaller and way jankier.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there's the More Than Music Fest
in Michigan. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, in Ohio.
In Ohio. That's right. Right. And, oh yeah. Michigan Fest was Michigan.
Right. Yeah. There were a couple other ones, but there weren't that many of them.
It's true.
And at the time, because this was essentially pre-internet, I thought of them as being so big, but it was maybe 150 people.
Yeah, totally.
You know, I remember seeing Hatebreed play on the floor of a theater in Indiana with Charles Bronson and Race Trader.
So good.
Which is like the most bizarre.
Most bizarre line. Yeah. Yeah. Charles Bronson being able to play with Hatebreed is so insane.
Yeah, it's like literally a joke.
That's so good.
And Race Trader with
Burn the Idol of the White Messiah. Yeah,
with Andy Hurley on drums and his judge shirt, sitting there looking like,
yeah,
like,
here we go, guys.
Yeah. What have I gotten myself into?
Totally.
So these things happened, and, you know, there'd be maybe 150 people there or something like that.
Right.
And you think about what did it take to even know about that, let alone show up in 1996 to something like that.
Totally.
And I've kept in touch with a lot of those people, and thinking back on it, that was a very, you know, those were definitely seekers, to get back to what we were talking about before. These were like really special people, for better or worse.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's been a long time since I felt that vibe, because it's way easier to go to This Is Hardcore than it is to go to More Than Music in 1995.
Absolutely.
And I feel that vibe again now from, like, you know, the people that are part of our community.
Yeah.
It's obviously easier to participate that, because you just put in your credit card number and subscribe.
Right.
But, you know, people went to our summit, and I felt that, like, the some of the people there are 19, 20 years old or something like
right,
that.
Right, the effort that's put into it.
And mm-hmm. talking to them, like, man, these kids are fucking, like, yeah,
they're engaged.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is really cool and energizing and inspiring. I felt the same way as I did meeting people, you know, 20-some years ago mm-hmm. that were making zines and starting labels and doing this other cool shit that then went on to do lots of other cool shit.
Right.
But that's been the biggest. So to answer your question, I guess it's not a surprise necessarily, I guess. I don't know if that's a word for it.
Well, but I like the correlation that you're drawing between the two.
Just
that.
These like these communities of like really passionate people that are doing something that is very ahead of the curve. Mm-hmm. And I guarantee you that in 5 or 7 or 10 years, like, the people who are running studios that are making whatever music is popular then mm-hmm. Everybody in that generation of producers is going to know about what we're doing right now.
Yeah.
I guarantee it, because one of the things that you'll notice is that a giant number of people in the music industry are like metal people.
Yeah.
In like the people that make, you know, like Shellback and Max Martin, you know, are metal guys.
Exactly.
You know, so the people in the studios in 5 or 10 years, they're all going to remember, I think, what we're doing right now.
Yeah.
And it's cool to just feel that.
Yeah. 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 That not only, like you said, that level of engagement, but just feel like, well, because ultimately you're creating value for people too. Like this is, yes, it is a transactional relationship, and yes, it is a business, but this business flourishes off of the idea that people will tell other people that this is a positive thing, you know, and that this is something that is creating value in their own lives.
Yeah.
And like that, I mean, you can't look at something like that and not just be like, whatever. It's just, you know, just
and
work.
And it's a real community. You know, people, there's people with the title of community manager.
Right.
At big companies basically means responding to comments on social media.
On social media, exactly. or if they have a message board, then they have to handle that as well. But right. Yes, yeah.
But this is an actual community, which is a really cool feeling. And I hope that it, you know, it's the same is true of Creative Live.
Yeah.
And so that's the thing I want to keep, you know, nurturing and growing.
Yeah. That's super exciting. Well, Finn, I love hanging out with you, man. We could do this for another 3 hours, but I feel like that would spin off into our own separate podcasts.
Well, anytime.
Well, yes. Thank you, Finn. Thanks for coming over. And I really enjoyed that conversation. It was, I had a loose framework of what I thought we were going to discuss, and I just ended up throwing most of that out. We were like halfway through. It's like, oh no, let's explore these nooks and crannies. I think it's interesting. So anyways, thanks. Like I said, Finn, and please sign up for his class. It's really, really cool. They put a lot of time and effort into this thing, and they ultimately want to help. It's not like they're doing this to be like, all right, man, we're going to make millions. It's like, no, we want to help. Yeah. We want to make some money for the time and effort that we put into it, but it's the real deal. Trust me. And the guest next week is an awesome one. Chris number two from Anti-Flag. I actually met up with them on tour, and we hung out in the green room and did the whole interview thing, like the whole traditional how bands get interviewed as opposed to like either over Skype or people coming over to my house. But anyways, Chris number two, great discussion. And that is what you have to look forward to next week. Okay. And until then, please be safe, everybody.
You've been listening to the Jabberjaw Podcast Network, jabberjawmedia.com.
Shh. I'm Bob Roth, host of the new podcast, Stay Calm. Meditation changed my life in college, and I've spent the last 50 years teaching people about the benefits of meditation, from celebrity clients to students in inner city schools. And now I'm sharing a lot of what I know straight to your ears in my new podcast. Join me every Monday through Friday morning. All you need is a few minutes and an open mind. Listen and subscribe to Stay Calm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Trust me in saying that no matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all of the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18+.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.